I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم dear listeners, dear ladies, dear mothers, dear sisters from all around the world, and welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. Well, we're back after too long. We missed Muslim lady, and Muslim lady was on a mission, actually. So technically, this is your new episode. I'm Asma, and I'm very happy to be here once more with the one and only Sister Zainab. Welcome back to your own studio, and assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much for having me. So glad to be here after a very long time.
Same, likewise. It's as if we're back home, and it feels so really home.
Yes.
As always, at the very beginning of our episodes, usually we have a very brief introduction to you, though I know everybody by now knows who is Sister Zainab, who has shared many insights and wisdom with us during all this long journey that we had on Muslim Lady. But once again, for those people who have just joined us after the war, please tell us about yourself, a brief introduction, actually.
Okay, so I am actually from Indian administrated Kashmir, and I have... done my bachelor's in science and then master's in linguistics, and then studied Hausa for more than a decade. Alhamdulillah, I had the privilege to be a guest of this program, Muslim Lady, for a couple of years now.
So thank you very much. So in many of the cases, one of the most prominent and common discussions that maybe the society structure would offer to be presented is the idea of modesty in dressing. And then this is not the topic of today, but it is in some way related to sexual violence. They would try to create a link between the way you dress and the rate of violence that might happen to your gender. And I want to see that. How much do you agree that if you dress properly, then the less you're going to be exposed to, for example, sexual harassment or the violences that might happen?
Okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Not 100%. I do not agree to this statement 100%. And even the teachings of Islam also do not agree to this thing 100%. So when we speak about this issue, basically, we have to separate certain things, certain questions that people mix up together. Is that what increases temptation and what causes the assault and who is responsible for the crime? They're not the same things. We cannot also answer with the slogans, because sometimes we have slogans like, even women, don't tell me how to dress. You cover your, you nurture yourself in a better way. So the reality is a bit more layered when we dig down, because across criminology, psychology, victimology research, one conclusion appears repeatedly. Sexual assault is less correlated with attraction and more correlated with power, with opportunity, with impulsivity, with antisocial behaviors, with prior abuse, and with the entitlement, with pornography exposure, weak consequences, and perceived vulnerability. So that's why we see, when you say, is it just a modesty in dressing? If it was 100% for that, then why are children assaulted? Then why are elderly people even assaulted? Why are...
And there are some surveys that they have done, and they figured out that there were some girls who have been actually assaulted, or they've been into such violences. They have done a test probably based on their dresses, and they figured out that they were having some simple dresses. So the one who did it, the one who's accused of the issue, seems to be telling with himself that probably this girl does not have someone to support her. So if I do something to her, nobody is going to accuse me or nobody is going to come and ask what happened.
Exactly. So, you know, an honest observer can explain these cases through, he cannot explain that that this all happened because of provocative clothing. Because if it was there, I said that elderly would have not been there, children would have not been there, or sometimes covered women would not have been there. So, for example, sometimes there's a covered woman, but then there's the way she speaks, it reflects that she's very vulnerable, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
psychology of the victim.
Exactly. And when the abuser notices the vulnerability, he uses the opportunity. So I told you, they are opportunity seekers.
We were reading a story, by the way, in the Telltale Heart. There was this madman who was saying that he was about to kill an old man. And then he said that, everybody calls me mad, but what is madness? Isn't it about sharpening of the senses? When your senses are getting to be sharped. The thing which is very common in all these lunatics is that they have a very sharp sense.
Right.
Like, just as you were saying, the vulnerability in your voice, in the way you talk, they can sense it.
In your behavior.
They can sense it in your behavior.
With those sharp senses.
Exactly. So as they sense it, the moment they start to smell
the accessibility,
a shred of vulnerability,
right,
they would start the process of plotting.
Exactly. So it's not always the clothing. It is, though. I would get to that. But many of these criminals have already admitted on tortures that it was accessibility, it was isolation, it was intoxication, it was inability to resist, it was expectation of impunity. That mattered more than appearance to us. So, you know, the predatory behavior often follows what criminologists call as the opportunity model, and they discuss this as motivated offender, vulnerable target, plus lack of capable guardianship, as you rightly mentioned, the guardianship. So when we elevate this discussion beyond the slogans, as I said, it's a deep layered discussion. See, if we talk about Islam, it does not say if society becomes modest, crime disappears. Have you seen such statement?
Mm-hmm.
Rather, we have clothing, like, we have, see, Islam also does not say that clothing has zero social effect.
Yeah.
Both extremes are intellectually wrong, and Islam recognizes human beings are affected by visual stimulation, right? Because the Quran begins, therefore, modesty by saying that it does not begin with women's clothing. It's very important in our discussion. See?
Yeah, Quran, a delicate point, actually.
Yeah, see? Quran begins the discussion of modesty not with the clothing of women, but with what? Tell the believing men to lower their gaze and guard their chastity. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is very much remarkable. Why? Because before discussing the female dress.
Exactly.
Before discussing the clothing.
So the first responsibility is technically on men.
Yes, it addresses male discipline, right?
Yes.
Why? Because Islam locates that first battlefield is inside the soul. It's not on the other person's body, right?
Yeah.
There's a battlefield, something inside you. So Islam speaks about women's modesty as a part of a wider architecture of the social ethics. Lowering the gaze, dignified speech, you know, we have those moral virtues of avoiding exploitation, respecting the boundaries, discouraging public sexualization, strengthening the family structures. And nowhere does Islam say that a person who dresses attractively deserves assault.
Exactly.
At the same time, right?
Yeah.
So the idea...
Just as the same point that modesty is not going to guarantee your safety.
Yes. So, and the same... These ideas very closer to the Jahiliyyah than the Islamic ethics.
To the ignorance, actually.
Yeah. But people try to, attach it to Islam. No, Islam says dressing is equal to less social assault and all. In the same way as it does not guarantee you, in the same way it does not tell you that if you dress attractively, you also deserve the assault. So
usually the accusation is not all addressing the victim.
Yeah.
The majority of the time we have to change our perspective. The one under accusation is actually the one who is practicing that crime.
Exactly. That's why Prophet, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, when he came to reform the society, he did not treat the victims as wrongdoers or as a guilty party, as we see in many of these assault cases, what is done in today's world. His method was to reform the hearts. His method was to establish justice. He wanted to cultivate the piety. We have to learn from those teachings. So,
but right now in today's society, when someone practices such an assault and violence, they actually are going to be treated based on laws, which is coming from the Islamic laws, which is again rooted in the words of the Prophet and of the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. Cursed are such people who would actually have some ill wills against the ladies in the society, children, elderly, anyone who's vulnerable.
Yeah.
These guys are never respected and they're never forgiven for the crime they do because it has got many consequences. Like, there are many reports telling us that the girls who've been through this would lose the future entirely.
Yeah.
And they would never cope up with the consequences, the psychological effects that would be there forever, like the traumas that they suffered.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be solved easily, and in many cases they wouldn't even be able to find a remedy for that. So yes, based on this, we could come to this conclusion that sometimes even dressing or the moral code that you pick for your clothing is not going to guarantee your safety. Yes, a Muslim lady is supposed to wear in a modest manner. And just as you said, she also has been asked to, just like the men, she has to lower her gaze as well. She has to...
dignified speech.
Exactly. Talk in a way that is not very much calling for the criminal.
Yeah, as we said, that she should not let others know that she's vulnerable.
Exactly.
Many people are suffering from depression today. Many people are suffering, they're alone.
Mm-hmm.
But they should not allow to. Self-esteem is not...
I don't think a Muslim lady would do that. Like, to share your depression with every third person who just comes to you.
Happens, unfortunately. Like, when you are depressed... for a long time, and it reflects in your behavior, in your speech.
Yeah.
But the self-esteem that has been taught to us through the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam is that we do not let that show, or we do not let ourselves look like vulnerable,
because exactly.
Not every person around you is.
I think Muslim ladies have already demonstrated that. Again, I would link this to what we're seeing right now in our own society in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Ladies, right now, well, the huge threat that is threatening all of us is the attack of the enemy. So how they're dealing with it, are they staying just inactive? Are they just mourning? Are they just falling into depression? No. Actively, they're standing confidently. They're trying to take all the possible ways in order to be strong and to show a very symbolic image of themselves.
You know, one of the responsibilities goes back on the government as well, like to reduce these criminal cases. I would say what I loved personally in Iran was like back in home when we used to watch movies, the family movies with the family together. Unfortunately, we used to get, we used to witness the scenes that were not the family scenes. So we had to fast forward the movie, or we just had to, move out of the room or something. Like, we feel very awkward because awkward moments are shared in the family films as well. But then when I started watching movies in Iran and all the televisions or any kind of sites I want to open, and it does not open you the sites that show weird ads, there are these pop-ups always, because there are entire industries that are profiting from this kind of business. So this kind of censorship from the government end is very important. Why? Because endless exposure to sexual imagery is it affects the dopamine system of a human being. It has effect on the impulse control and expectations. So there are, as I said, a lot of industries that profit from turning human bodies into commodities. And this also has effect, like not the clothing directly, but the exposure to those imageries makes this person, more...
Would sharpen the senses of that madman.
Exactly. Yeah. So that, he can find that accessibility and vulnerability and then go ahead.
Again, like always, assault. We come back to this discussion of same as media literacy that we really wanted to have. I think Muslim ladies have to go through male literacy. Like to know more about them, to know how to really interact with them. If you're in a workplace, you need to know some certain rules. You need to know how to treat them. And the same thing about vulnerability that we refer to many times. If they know about the realm of men, the malehood, then they would probably be able to wipe out all the vulnerabilities. Like
I heard one of the very good Iranian speakers once talking on women issues. He said to all the women, I gift you one thing. You should go through the book Zanon as Nigahe Mardan, Women from the Point of View of Men. So, inshallah, we hope that translations come out soon and everybody gets access to these
books. Yeah, and we also
can
have discussions on that. Based on the chapters of that book, we could have a very fruitful discussion. Thank you anyway. This was a very fruitful episode, I think, and I hope that it would work for the listeners as well as a fruitful trigger for thought. Until another episode of Muslim Lady, I wish you a healthy and happy and prosperous life, dear ladies. Take care of yourself. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges.